I'm Donald Glover, and you are watching or listening to the Post Credit Scene Podcast.
We are back in the studio, the Post Credit Scene Podcast. We are a 14HQ original, and we are lovers of film and TV and theatre. That's going to be the new part of the slogan.
Is it?
Lovers of film, TV and theatre, because our good friend Cobanza has been very active this year. And he's actually been getting some invitations. I think we should talk about that first, you know.
Okay.
Talk to me about your... we are a post-credit scene podcast. Talk to me about your adoration for theatre, because it's something that I've always known you've loved and liked.
Yeah.
But I think it's a good place to start. You've been getting a few invitations to watch some shows.
Yeah.
And we know you love storytelling, so talk to us about that.
I do love storytelling. I got invited to go watch a ghost story, 222, a ghost story, which is... a play that's been going on for like the past five, six years, and it keep getting repurposed. They had Stacey Dooley, they had my guy from In Between Us, the guy that lies all the time.
Can't remember his name. Yeah, James Buckley.
Yeah. Well done.
Yeah, the only reason why I know that is because he's got a YouTube channel with his wife.
Yeah. I've seen clips. It's funny.
Bare funny.
I've only had an actor called, I think it's Josh or John McFadden, and somebody else, I can't remember. It was a really good play. They reached out to me, sent me an email asking me if I wanted to come down to go watch it. Yeah. They've invited me to an after party, which I couldn't go to. And I saw Gima was out there as well.
G the Key. Shout out to Gima, friend of the show.
The pianist. If
Oh, yes.
Yeah,
yes,
he was out there. So I saw the back of his head, but it was too far away for me to go speak to him. Got invited to that. Got invited to some other theatre shows. One was in Croydon. Got invited to another one that I couldn't go, that was in Peckham. Unfortunately, it was on my friend's birthday. So there's quite a few theatre shows that I've been invited to. I just love theatre. I love acting. A good storytelling. Been to the Bush Theatre a few times this year. And I think I think that's the best theatre place in London, at Bush Theatre. There's currently a play called My Father's Fable. Excellent play. I love our plays. Love of good acting.
I love theatre as well, man.
You should go to more theatre shows. I recommend you some.
Yeah, please do, man.
Like, there's a play coming out from the 12th of August to mid-October called Shifters. That's probably my favourite play that I've watched. I highly recommend it. Go with our babes. Go watch it with our babes.
Do you go with a different babes at every time?
You know what? Most likely, because I go with my friends, innit? So, yeah. And usually I go with my friends. So, yeah, more times than not, I'll probably go with different babes.
Fair enough.
But they're actually my friends. They're my guys, and they're my people. Shout out to you.
I hear it. No, I've gone
you have to catch me out. It's not gonna work.
Nah. I've gone to a few things. Sorry, guys. I'm just going to wave that thing. Kyle here. Make sure that is in the shot. Yeah. Thank you. Cool. Anyways. Bro, over the years, I've gone to like the obvious ones. I saw Hamilton Live a couple years ago.
Nice. I want to watch that.
That was freaking sick. And I saw it during like the hype of it.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying? Yeah, it's fine. But we're going to carry on. This probably won't be in the visual. What do you call it? That was like thing pretty dope. I've seen Woman in Black.
Okay.
I saw, obviously, I forgot the one that I saw at Soho Theatre when I was at my old job. I forgot what it was called, but it was fucking sick.
You remember what it was about?
It was like these five black kids, and they were kind of, it was...
It's fine.
Yeah, gone, finished. But I saw the obvious ones like Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, mm-hmm. with the black girl as the lead. She was dope. I saw Dreamgirls, okay?
Dreamgirls is one of my favourites.
Oh, bro, with Beverly Knight. Oh, my days, bro.
I went to watch it with, what's her name from Glee?
The
one that plays Mercedes.
Yeah.
I apologize. I forgot her name, but yeah, I went to watch it when she was on there.
Yeah. No, well, Dreamgirls, was it at the Savoy?
I can't remember.
I went to when it was there. The Savoy was crazy, bro. Crazy.
And I need Dreamgirls to return. It hasn't been in theatre in a good amount of time. I don't think it's been in theatre post pandemic.
Well, the only one that I kind of want to see now, okay, like in commercial theatre, is
West End.
Cursed Child.
Oh, Harry Potter.
I tried to book it the other day.
Bro. Oh yeah, it's gonna be a myth,
bro. It's like four bills.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Because you pay for the part one, which is in the afternoon, which is like 180,
Yeah.
And when you pay for part two, which is in the evening, or you can watch part two on like a different day, innit? You know what I'm saying? But you can, but it's actually cheaper to do it on the same day and pay for like the whole thing. But it's like 300 to like four bills.
Yeah, that's crazy. I would never go unless I'm invited.
Shout out to Warner.
Shout out to Warner.
But yeah, dope, man, dope. I'll be joining you.
Yeah, come.
Oh, thanks.
Yep.
Cool stuff, man. So we're going to do an episode today on some of the stuff we've been watching in the last couple of weeks, because it's been a while since we've recorded. You don't know that, and you should know that, but you do now, so what can I say? It's going to be a very interesting episode as well, because we're going to join that in tandem with a conversation about the state of cinema in 2024. Some people are losing their minds saying that cinema is dying, and some people aren't so concerned. So it should be a good and fun conversation. But to kick things off, guys, man, what have you been watching in the last couple of weeks? We've had some releases in cinema. We've had Inside Out 2. We've had The Bike Riders, which came out a few days ago. And we had Bad Boys Ride or Die as well. So yeah, talk to me, guys. And also, there's obviously TV shows that have come out. House of the Dragon, The Boys, Presumed Innocent. What have you guys been watching, man? Open floor, whoever wants to kick things off, Manny, maybe you can start.
Yeah. Film wise, I haven't been watching anything. I haven't gone to cinema since I watched Planet of the Apes, and I think I watched two films in cinema in the month of May. It's been really bad, and I think because in May, March, and April, the films I watched weren't great.
You just did a mad thing, you know.
What?
You said May.
I know. I skipped the one more. Yeah.
So March, I'm trying to process it in my head. Yeah, go on.
March, April, May. I feel like the quality of films that I watched wasn't great, which is fine.
Which films would you put in that category of underwhelming, shall I say?
I think I watched Drive Away Dolls. That was one of the worst films that I watched. I can't remember. It was a bunch of films, isn't it?
Fair.
It was a bunch of films.
Mea culpa.
I'm joking. Worst film I've watched in my life. So there's a bunch of films I went to cinema specifically to watch, and I felt overall my experience was underwhelmed.
Mm-hmm.
And not that it's put me off going to cinema, but I'm less enthusiastic to go. I even booked tickets to go, a few cinema tickets to watch this week. I didn't go to a single one of them. And yeah, I'm just not excited to go watch any or many films that are out, if I'm being completely honest. I need to, because obviously I have to come here on pod, but it's been a struggle for me. So I've resorted to watching, to be fair, I've been reading a lot more recently, but also resorted into watching a lot more TV shows. I watched a TV show called Scavenger's Reign in Netflix. I don't know if you watched it. It's a really good animated series. It's about Ed. So I'm assuming like the world has expanded and they go to different parts of the universe to settle down with different colonies.
Yeah.
So the specific spaceship.
I saw this.
You probably would have seen clips of it. It's a great series. So there's one particular ship that is traveling to a different colony, but something happens on the way and the ship crashes, or the ship is about to crash. So a few of the members of the ship have to get onto pods and land on this planet. And then we see these different characters navigating through the planet, trying to get to the ship that has landed on the planet too. And it's a really, really, really good show. It was on HBO Max. It's now moved on to Netflix. But I don't think it's getting a second season, unfortunately, which I'm not too mad at, but it's a really good series. I really enjoyed it, and I would definitely recommend for people to watch it.
It came out did this year, or was it like an old thing?
On Netflix, it came out like in the past 2 weeks. On HBO Max, it came out like last year.
Fair enough. Yeah. All right, cool.
But it's new. It's newish.
We should definitely do like an ep on these contracts. How these things are being shopped around, bro. Because my said HBO
Max.
That means that someone else produced it. It can't be them. Because if they're giving it to Netflix, it can't be them.
Possibly, I don't know. Maybe we need to get an expert that knows quite a bit just to jump on the pod.
Hell yeah.
But yeah, that's one of the things I've been watching recently. Obviously, you spoke about Insecure before. And obviously, the other stuff that we're going to talk about, like The Boys, House of the Dragon. But
talk about Insecure.
Insecure, loved it. I stopped it episode 4, season 4, episode 8. One of the best episodes of TV that I've watched. For those that not Insecure, know exactly what I'm talking about. It's a really, really great episode.
Why? And
so there's quite a lot of us spoilers. Quite a
you
lot
can
of
spoil it.
Okay, there's quite a lot of build up between.
The series has been out for a couple of years, man. Yeah,
there's quite a lot of build up between two characters, Issa and Lawrence. Obviously, at the start of the show, they're one in a relationship together. Issa does something fucked up, them to break up. And throughout most of it, obviously, the series is about Issa, and there's a season where Lawrence is not really in it. But as that season progresses, we see how both of them are growing individually as people. And obviously, in this episode, we kind of get, as viewers, kind of get. What's the word looking for? Not condolences. When you break up with somebody, then you go back to chop. What's it called? What's the word I'm looking for?
Makeup sex.
No, something else, man. It's like relief. Oh, bro, why is English so hard right now? There's a word that I'm
I mean, you're stretching it. Just
no, it's gonna bug me if I don't remember. I'm sorry, it's not good pudding, but it is a word.
You ain't got it, so stop. I'm not gonna bother.
Cool. it's gonna come to me afterwards. But yeah, it's a good episode in terms of just, seeing those two characters have to grow as individually, and then they come together for this particular episode. And it was just a really enjoyable watch. It was shot really well. It's one of the best shot TV episodes that I've watched. This particular scene of them two standing in front of like lights, they're split in half, red and blue, and the way the composition and the focus of them two is actually so brilliant. It's a great piece of art just to look at. It's great character writing throughout Insecure, and obviously in that episode too. And I haven't watched an episode since then because I'm aware that season 5 is the last season. I'm enjoying this show so much that I don't want to rush for it. I don't want to binge it too far, too tough.
That's
again.
Interesting.
So I've taken a break. I'm happy that I've taken a break. I'm probably going to go back to it after I go through The Boys and House of the Dragon, and then actually focus on Insecure individually. But yeah, that's what I've been watching recently.
Damn.
Yeah.
Over to you.
Oh, over to me. God damn. I've been in my rewatch era, just in prep.
I mean, you're always in your rewatch era.
No, but in prep for new things. You know what I'm saying? So like I've recapped season 1 of House of Dragons. Obviously,
how'd you find it?
I'm so glad that I recapped it.
Necessary.
Ridiculously necessary. And I've been stuck in House of Dragons. I've been reading the comic versions of the book.
Okay.
It's dope. Uh-huh. It's dope. And I got to, so I've what I realized, yeah, in season 1 of this pod, when I was in my like Marvel bag, yeah, season 2, I was reading the comics, yeah, up until the ones that I thought the films were like related to,
right?
And then I would just stop because I was like, let me not spoil it for me, right? Blah blah blah. But obviously, sometimes you can't avoid it because Marvel will use like 2-3 comics in one film. So when you're like, oh shit, like cool. So I started. I wasn't doing that with Game of Thrones, but then one of my boys, okay, sent me the House of Dragons comic the comic version of the book, and it just artistically looks stunning, you know what I'm saying? And then I was like, all right, cool, do you know what, let me give it a go. I've been loving it. So I started the Game of Thrones one and I got really far in it, and then I paused it and I started the House of Dragons one. So I like the book is very different, you know, to what's going on. It's not like bare different, but I got all the way to Cheese and Blood, which is obviously
the first app, yeah.
And even the way that Cheese and Blood
is much more gruesome, yeah.
So much more gruesome.
Call it Blood and Cheese. I don't know what Cheese and Blood is making me.
But you did April, May, fucking March, bruv.
Yeah, I did it once.
Sorry, is it Blood and Cheese?
It's Blood and Cheese, yeah.
I thought it was Cheese and Blood, sorry, my bad. but like, just everything about it, and even like the start of obviously it's a TV show, so you can't dictate when it starts, right? But like even at the start of like Blood and Cheese, okay, when Aemon comes back from killing Luke, there's a whole thing about it. There's a whole like chapter just about that, you know, about them, about like the queen getting mad, and she makes a comment. Sorry, he makes a comment, says, you've got one eye, that doesn't make you blind. You know what I mean? It was just like, damn, like, he was proper harsh on him, like, really, really harsh on him. And then when you watch the first episode of House of Dragons, you clock, like, he's still being harsh of him. Like, he's, well, obviously, like, they tried to
you
show
think,
like,
you think, what, you thought Otto was being harsh with Aemon in the first episode?
I just think he was being strategically harsh.
I think he was being quite manipulative.
No, but that's my point. I think he was being so behind the eyes aggressive. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, behind what he was showing.
Because he knows because he knows he can't speak to Aemon the way, because Aemon's got the biggest dragon in the land.
And
he's a very skilled warrior.
Yeah, you'll pattern him.
Yeah.
You'll pattern him immediately.
You have to manage people like that, or try to at least.
Facts. Yeah. Facts. And, like, luckily, like, I must say luckily, but, like, the king, you know.
As in, Aegon?
Yeah.
Aegon, yeah.
Aegon, like, he's not as, he's got, interestingly, like, a Joffrey-type aesthetic where he just wants to do what he wants. He's pretty playful, but he's not sadistic.
Yeah, he's not.
He hasn't got the same
tendencies. Yeah, yeah.
I was kind of worried, like, at the beginning of the episode where we saw that Joffrey type of personality.
Yeah.
I was kind of worried that was...
They were playing to the same trope again.
Well, that's the thing, though. Is that going to happen now because
of what happened in the episode?
So if that now happens, I'm not mad at it. It makes sense. But from the way it looked like at the beginning of the episode, it's like, don't give me another Joffrey. But then obviously we've seen that he's definitely more kinder and he's not less of a dickhead. But now if he becomes, that it makes sense.
You've given us a very good reason.
Rather him play that character for at least one more episode, because he was so good.
If he becomes that character, it makes sense. But if he was a character from the start, it's like it's just copy and paste.
No. I'm saying
you would have liked to seen it progress a bit. Yeah, slower, essentially.
Yeah, like I would have liked to see him be this playful self for at least two episodes.
Oh, the playful self. Oh, yeah. I got you.
And then go into the whole whatever. But because I'm saying, I actually think in episode one, I think he was the strongest character. Sorry, the strongest actor. Generally, I think.
I can't lie. Emma Darcy, bro.
Bro, she was good, man.
And she didn't. She was probably in like 15% of the episode. But I thought she stole every single one. And she only had four words in the episode.
What? She had four words.
She had four words.
Damn.
I want Aemon's head. That's it. Bring me Aemon's head. One of them. It's one of those two sentences.
Nah, I'm still giving it to Aemon, man. Aegon.
Nah, man.
Bro, he was good. So
he was good, man. He was good, but
like he brought this completely different tone where, you know, he was letting like his son like, you know, play with
into the small council meeting.
Lannisters with Tywin Lannister. I don't know, man.
I like that scene because it showed his incompetence in terms of not taking
the small council meeting seriously,
and also showcased his power in terms of like letting his son do whatever he wants, and obviously everybody making excuses.
There's so much to talk about with this series, you know, because, you know, it's so interesting. Like, one of the things we see in the first series is Viserys bringing Rhaenyra into the small council meetings, and she's becoming aware of how to manage meetings and politics and deal with different people. So she got an insight into what it's like to be a queen. She was being prepped and trained for that particular role. Aegon never got that training. So essentially, I think he kind of partly resents Viserys for that, which is natural, because Viserys definitely loved Rhaenyra more than he did Aegon.
Well, because that was there.
And that was he had Rhaenyra with the love of his life, and Aemon.
Of course.
Whereas with Aegon and Aemond, I don't think he has that sort of love for Alison. She was essentially forced upon him, and he willingly accepted.
And admitted.
Yeah. And so the two children that have left, in terms of Aegon and Aemond anyway, they've kind of just been neglected by both parents. And we see that in the way both children behave and carry themselves. But I love the scene in the Aegon's on the Iron Throne, and he's talking to the sort of the small folk, and they're telling him about sort of the difficulties.
He's got his boys.
No, before that, he was talking to them. No, maybe it was on the way to that, actually. He's talking about like the difficult. They're telling him, we're struggling. The war, the impact of the war, which gives us an insight into how the war is impacting the wider world of King's Landing beyond just the Targaryens, which is really cool. And we also got to see like him being somewhat of a nice human being, which is something you would not have expected based upon the first season, right?
And it's super mad because Otto, he was like, no, we need his sheep to feed the dragons just in case they go into war. And I was like, raw.
And
like,
he's, the thing is, Otto's not necessarily wrong.
Wrong, yeah.
No.
But he's
not,
also he's attempting to be very manipulative and controlling. And I think he's going to be, alongside sort of Alison, their relationship, obviously, so Kristen Cole, it's going to be very interesting. Because this episode was mainly Team Black. It was mainly, Team Green, sorry. It's mainly focused on the Greens.
Which I'm glad.
I get, okay, yeah.
I'm already more supportive of Team Black, so I would like to see a more...
I think you're right.
More of Team Green, because I'm already on Team Black, and that's not going
to
change.
You don't need to change. Give
me some more. Let me a chance to want to support Team Green.
Do you?
And I think, go on.
No, go ahead first. I'll go next.
It's just so funny that we're both wearing green as well.
What I was going to say was, it was interesting because the episode, for me, unintentionally, somewhat makes you empathize and sympathize with Alicent, even though she's been a piece of shit. But it also makes you. But it also makes you question her character. So, like, you discredit Rhaenyra for doing what she did with Kristen Cole. You go do the exact same thing.
Correct.
But we have to.
You bounced that dick, fam. She was bouncing, fam.
She was going crazy, man.
She was going crazy.
I can't lie. She was like.
She was doing the huck too.
Okay.
And he was going crazy as well.
You know what's mad? He's the only character in the show I actually really dislike.
Kristen Cole. He's a piece of shit.
His face. You know, his face is so annoying.
Yeah. He's a piece of shit. And he's really good looking as well, so it makes it even worse.
Yeah. He's a piece of shit.
All I was going to say was, but we have to date back to the first episode of the first series, right, where we see Alison essentially has been mistreated by her father. She's been pimped by her father. She's been given no real credence to have her own life. And she's watching Rhaenyra living the exact life that she's essentially wanted to live.
Yeah.
And the fact the first season alludes to, or at least the first half of the first season alludes to a romance between Rhaenyra and Alicent. It kind of gives like small glimpses of a potential romance there. Did you watch it back?
Yeah, of course.
I don't know if you noticed it, but I definitely noticed there was like, this is more than just a friendship between them.
Yeah,
and obviously they're split apart by Rhaenyra's behaviour with Daemon and her behaviour with Kristen Cole. And obviously her father and Alicent get pimped to King Viserys. It's such an interesting, why I like this series, and it's grown on me more than when I started rewatching a few weeks ago, is because I really like the enclosed feeling of the series. I love the family drama, which is mixed with politics, whereas Game of Thrones is a like much wider universe. There's like 7, 8, 9, 10
it's crazy.
Houses and families to keep track of, and I love Thrones is the best, but I like this intimate tone.
We spoke about it on the pod recently in terms of how Game of Thrones is just more world building, and
it's literally world building.
Yeah, and you look at the whole of Westeros. While this one, again, you mentioned, is it like a family political drama?
It's but a soap.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
But with the start of season two, and what got me going right away was hearing...
Winterfell.
Oh, bro, gassed me immediately.
Gassed me right away. Because
it made you feel like you're home.
Yeah, it did. It made me miss Game of Thrones so much. I was like, oh, I remember...
But did it also piss you off?
It actually didn't.
You know why though?
Yeah, yeah, I know why. But I actually didn't. But what I was gonna say is that even when you mentioned in terms of where they were talking to the king in terms of like the sheep and how it affects them, and also coupled that with the beginning of the story of us being in Winterfell, it just adds a lot more world building and lore to the story, more than it did in the previous season. Again, it's not necessarily a critique because that's what the show was meant to be.
Yeah, yeah.
But just having those two scenes just added a lot more. It's made the world a lot bigger and showcased like how much like the Dance of the Dragons affects the whole of Westeros.
And not just his family.
So I really did appreciate that, and I guess they're going to lean into a bit more, just saying that whatever happens here, it does affect the rest of Westeros.
I love the first episode, man.
Same.
There was so much to talk about. You got Daemon and the Rhaenys and their relationship.
Yeah.
Obviously, Daemon essentially played a role in killing two of her children, passing away, shall I say, at least. It was a really good episode. I really enjoyed it, and I'm looking forward to.
No, sorry, I was going to say something.
Say something.
What I really appreciated was the parallels between Aemon and Daemon.
It's so funny. They're twin flames and they don't even realize it.
They're the same person.
They're the same person.
They are the same person, man. But yeah, this one.
No. Good point.
Last point for me. Okay, like you know, I was when I was reading the book here, it was like after Luke died, right? It went from the era of Viserys, the peaceful marriages, courts, and bonds, to the era of of dragons, war and death, right? And then obviously as we know, we come out of this, we go into the era of the Mad King and the end of the Targaryens, and then we go into the era of the actual Game of Thrones, you know?
Yeah.
Okay. Where people are just fighting for a throne that isn't theirs. It actually belongs to the Targaryens, you know, like, and that's why it goes on for so many years. Then they talk about how, like, is the hand,
as in Otto?
No, the hand, just the job,
the role of it.
Yeah, is that job the most dynamic job in the whole of
most powerful in
the Seven Kingdoms?
The most powerful job.
The most, like, whoever is sitting in that chair,
mm-hmm.
and doing that job has a ridiculously short life sentence.
Oh, okay.
But also has, as you just said, like, the most power, right? But the crazy thing is, Alicent, oh, she actually learns how to be a queen through Viserys, because he fires at her. You know what I'm saying? So for a long time, okay, during her growing up period, it was genuinely done by him. So when you see her doing her little signs of like, no, we can figure this out, that's Viserys. That's not Otto. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, he's asking her to be slimy, to be on fucking,
yeah,
crud.
Because he also knows that she always will love Rhaenyra, no matter what. Yeah. He's very aware of that. And Aemon makes a point of that when he's talking to Kristen Cole, when he calls her Alicent, doesn't call her mum. Because he knows Alicent is always going to have a love for Rhaenyra no matter what. Does that trump her love for her children? I guess we'll have to wait and see. But yeah. Before we get into our pod episode, one thing I watched yesterday was The Backriders, which is a film that we were supposed to watch like a year ago. The film's been ready and
in
done.
In October, I believe, yeah.
It's the BFI Film Festival, starring Tom Hardy, Jodie Comer, who is a superstar.
Austin Butler.
Jodie Comer is so... She's so cold. So cold. Have you seen Killing Eve?
No, I haven't.
If you watch that, obviously she was in the last duel with Ben Affleck and Matt Damon well.
Yeah.
She's so talented, bro. Yes. And she's got like multiple accents and dialects, yes, and languages and voices, and can portray multiple characters, which is obviously based upon Killing Eve, but I haven't seen her in The Last Duel, and I've seen her in The Bike Riders. She's immense. She's so, so talented.
Okay, dope.
And obviously Austin Butler as well. And the film is inspired by a photo book of the same name by Danny Lyons. Watched the film yesterday and I had a good time with it, man. I had a good time with The Bike Riders. It essentially follows this motorcycle club called The Vandals,
mm-hmm.
led by Tom Hardy's character called Johnny. And it's like a love triangle within this motorcycle club between Jodie Comer's character, Kathy, Austin Butler's character, Benny. Them two are in love. They get married. They meet in a bar and obviously end up getting married within 5 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
But Benny is part of this motorcycle club, which is led by Johnny. And it essentially tracks the journey of this motorcycle club and how it changes over time, how it goes from being like a place where people are there together as a community. It's there, essentially like their community. And you have to remember at this time, it was like a rebellious era for America as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
So it plays into that sort of era of people trying to be different, wanting to create their own sort of communities.
Yeah.
And the Bike Riders was that, in terms of the Vandals, which is the name of the motorcycle club. And it essentially shows the growth and the development and the change in this motorcycle club over time. I've really enjoyed the performances of all three. Tom Hardy's sort of comedic timing is superb, like really, really good. His American accent, it's got like loads of different accents, but I can overlook that. I love Tom Hardy. I think he's amazing. Jodie Comer is the star of the film for me. Superb, unbelievable performance. She's the narrator and she gives us the lens of this story and how the motorcycle club sort of evolved. But it's done through an interview with the photographer that she's speaking with. She's speaking with the photographer and he's speaking to her about the sort of development of this motorcycle club. And she's telling them the journey over time. And she's our lens into this film. I thought Austin Butler was really, really good as well in terms of his acting. I think his character, Benny, could have had more nuance and depth. And I felt like I didn't know much about him by the end of the film.
Mm.
But he himself was really good.
Mm.
But he did the Austin Butler thing of like, he didn't actually say much. Like, there wasn't like much dialogue for him.
Just a bit pouting.
But looking good.
Yeah.
Looking good. He's a good looking guy.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It was a really, really good film.
Crazy face structure.
I enjoyed the film. I enjoyed the depiction of the club's transformation. I think it showed us how younger generations, because for example, let's say like related to London, we're in a gang.
Mm.
I'm one of the olders, you're one of the youngers, you want to join with the olders.
Mm.
But also the youngers tend to be a bit more rebellious over time in comparison to the older gens. Yeah. And that's how the motorcycle club was as well. Like some of the younger generations in the film of like motorcyclists wanted...
Even Kitchen.
They wanted, somewhat, yeah, they wanted to also be part of the gang. And when they rejected, they were like, well, we're going to be rebellious and create our own sort of thing. Without spoiling it, you kind of see the difference in generations, which is natural anyway. So yeah, I really enjoyed the film, man. I think the film highlights generational shifts. What other notes did I make of this film? The love triangle is probably the most interesting part in terms of Kathy, Benny, and then Benny's love for the motorcycle club and for Johnny. And Johnny's the head of the club, right? So it's kind of like there's a somewhat struggle with her loving him, him loving the club and motorcycles, and not being able to let go despite the dangers of the motorcycle club. Mm. And we see how dangerous the club becomes over time just due to generational shifts. So yeah, man, good film. Enjoyed it. I would recommend the film. I don't think it's a perfect film. I don't think it's an amazing film, but it's a good, solid film.
Yeah.
That if you went to the cinema, I think you can have a good time. I also think it's a film that if you're enamored with motorcyclists and motorcycles, you'll love this film even more. Whereas for me, it was more of a window into that sort of subculture.
Yeah.
Good film.
Damn.
Yeah. You watch Bad Boys?
I did watch Bad Boys. I'm really upset that we couldn't cover it just due to scheduling when it came out. But I just want to say, welcome back, Will Smith, baby.
That's your goat.
Woo!
That's your goat.
What a film. Oh my days, bro. And Bad Boys 3, okay, I'm gonna say this now. Bad Boys 3 was fucking shit, bro. Was shit. Oh my god, it was so bad. Like, I was embarrassed, like watching it. It was awful, man. They tried to do the whole young and old thing, and it was like, oh no. And I hate when reboots do that. When reboots do the whole, oh, we're bringing it back, but everything's so cool and young now. And I understand you have
was
to...
Bad Boys 3 a reboot, or just like...
No, it was a sequel, fam.
It's a sequel, but it wasn't a reboot, right?
No. But like they've done the thing where like Martin Lawrence and Will Smith are old now, and there's a new tag team like squad and blah 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 and like that kind of stuff, you know, all that shit, you know. So I don't know, man. But Bad Boys 4, wait, it was a lot funnier than the third one. The third one relied so much on like the Martin Lawrence just over joking. I felt like every time he spoke, it was a fucking joke.
You don't feel like that was 4 as well?
Nah, I feel like 4 was what they done was they gave him less lines. Do you know what I'm saying? So like, even though, like, I think they had a lot more dialogue. There was, bro. I rewatched it, Bad Boys 1 and 2, and the best part about 2, yeah, is.
Do you think that's the best one?
Yeah, I think 2 is arguably one, probably top 5 cop films of all time. Like, and bro, I saw some idiot doing like a review on it. Ever
why is he an idiot? Because he didn't agree with you.
Yeah, literally.
Yeah, you're an idiot as well.
Literally.
Off the top of your head, what would your top 5 cop films be?
Beverly
Hills Cops.
Hills 2.
Okay.
Beverly Hills 2, Bad Boys 2. Off the top of my head,
that's a tough question.
Yeah,
it is. But I actually done this the other day with Charles when I watched the film and we started naming them. Damn it!
We'll come back to it.
You'll make a video doing your top 5.
Hell yeah! I'll fully do that.
Saying that explainers are back?
They're back.
Go on. Give us your Bad Boys thoughts. I've got some as well. So
I with the best part about 2, yeah, was at the end where they're going to get Gabrielle Union. By the way, she was looking crazy in that film. God,
she probably always will look crazy.
She always, bro. She looks. Anyways, sorry. Yeah.
I go one. You don't have to go that far. Okay, I went far as well, so it's fine.
What did you say?
That's a huck too.
Okay, no, yours was guys.
What, yeah. Slurp?
Yeah.
What's worse, slurping on it or spitting on it?
No, but he didn't actually spit on it. He just made the weird noise. You slurp. Come on, bro.
That's crazy.
Toby,
what would you rather do in public?
Just a note, Toby, not everything needs to be in a clip, bro. He's made me do some crazy edits, bro.
It's a scene where like they clock, yo, like they've got the money, they've got everything, but their sister has just been robbed by this guy. Oh no. and it's just this emotional bit where he walks in, into the thing. They clock, like, he's not getting help. Da, da, da. They walk out, like, yo, what's it, Bad Boys for Life, blah, blah, blah. And then it's just a montage of them getting everybody in, patterning it all up, okay, getting very emotional. And when the plan of action happens, it's like a 7-minute segment, bro. And when it actually starts, when like the shooting starts, then they can start making some jokes here and there. It's calm, but it's a serious situation. It's still a cop film.
Yeah.
Whereas in the third one, it wasn't a cop film, bro. It was just banter. Do you know what I'm saying? So I feel like with this one, they had a good mixture. It's still the third best film, by the way. It still goes 2-1, then 3. Sorry, 2-1-4 and
yeah. But I still want to know what you liked about 4, bro.
But 4, I really liked that it was a mixture of both. It was a mixture of like the comedy that we know that Martin Lawrence can do.
There were some really good moments, I agree.
Some fantastic moments, yeah. Okay. But then there's also a theme mixture of that Will Smith is clearly the more dynamic actor, but we need to see more from him, right? And I feel like we saw so much more from him because he was married and you know,
he was gorgeous.
Gorgeous.
Oh my gorgeous. God, Black Goddess, man.
Oh my Didi Days, bro.
Crazy.
Yeah.
She's crazy. She's crazy.
And you know,
my Didi Days is crazy, by the way.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Gorgeous. Let me find the actress's name.
Yeah, please do. She was gorgeous, and then he also had the factor of his son.
His son.
Do you know what I'm saying?
So, and his son, obviously, Conrad killed Conrad.
Exactly. So, yeah. Exactly. So there was a lot more like depth to it, and the fight scene at the end, yeah, where Will Smith went crazy and then done the whole flip defit when he flipped and then shot at the same time.
Is this the first person shooter perspective thing?
Yeah.
In the third act.
Oh my
god. And obviously you've seen the behind the scenes of him with the gun. Doing the whole that was one of the best scenes of the film. Well, one of the best scenes I've seen this year.
Yeah. Top tier, man. And even just the PR and the press behind all of it, you know, he started off the whole, I guess, global PR thing.
I think it's Tasha Smith.
Yeah, she's stunning, man.
Unbelievable.
Stunning.
Yeah.
And she's British, right?
Let's have a look.
She's British, bro.
Golly.
I believe she's British. I believe she's British.
God.
God. Damn it, she's stunning.
Manny. Big mommy, man.
Yeah, I'm looking at her right now.
But yeah.
The wicked son of breeze in that one, though.
Good film.
We can overlook those things, bro.
Good film, good film, sort of film, family film, boys film, nostalgic film. I think feel that, like, this is what people thought Fruit Free was.
Good. I think it's a typical summer blockbuster movie. It's got two of the best scenes I've seen this year. I experienced one of the best crowd reactions I've seen. It's probably the best crowd reaction I've seen in a cinema this year with the nephew.
Reggie.
Reggie
scene is pop. Yo,
it's one of, it's one of the best. In terms of action, this film does the most, and it's great. And it was enjoyable. Like, that Reggie scene was so over the top, and it was brilliant at being over the top.
Yeah.
The scene with Will Smith on the sort of first-person shooter mode thing,
yeah,
over the top, but so good. They tried so many drones and camera angles and perspectives and cuts, sharp and fast, and it was sometimes overwhelming, but, like, in a way of, like, I really had a good time.
Yeah.
So, shout-out to Bad Boys 4, man.
Yeah. Even the plane scene. Crazy scene.
Yeah. Oh, when they're breaking up.
When they're breaking up. Cool. Crazy scene.
And yeah, I've also watched Hitman.
Did you?
You watched it, yeah?
Watched it yesterday.
Ah, so we could talk.
Is it about the game?
No.
Okay, cool.
It follows, I can't remember the character's name now, but because it was a few weeks ago that I watched it.
Richard?
No, let me get my notes because I've got him here.
Gary?
Yes, Gary Johnson.
Gary Johnson. The real guy's name is Richard Johnson.
Yeah. Glenn Powell stars in this film. And can I just say, I was actually really, really impressed with Glenn Powell.
He's a really good actor.
Yeah.
And he had to show range in this film.
Yeah. Yeah. And I've seen some people, like, oh, this film is overrated. I'm like, it depends what you expected from it, because people did rate the film quite highly before sort of it came onto Netflix and so on and so forth. So your perspective of this will be very, like, subjective. But I rewatched Top Gun Maverick recently, and that's when I realized, Glenn Powell was in Top Gun Maverick, and it clicked on, and he was really good in Top Gun Maverick, and he showed a lot of range, in comparison to, for example, Anyone But You, and same with Hitman. And Hitman's a good film. It was interesting to see Powell and his ability to, in a comedic way, display various characters and do so very well and embody those characters. I really enjoyed the chemistry with, let me find her name.
with Adria Ajona, who plays Madison, sort of the love interest, if you like. And it follows his character as he sort of becomes a fake hitman, a pretend hitman. And it's essentially working for the New Orleans police. But he's also got a job as a professor of philosophy at a university. And I think, Manny, that was my most interesting part of the film, was the sort of philosophical questions that the film tried to pose, it, blending in with the romance and the comedy, because essentially it's asking you, as and us as human beings, are you who you think you are? Yeah. Who are we as people? Can we be multiple people as well? Which is a very philosophical question, and I like the way it aligned with his job in the film.
Yeah.
And the film intentionally made the point of making you question these things. But yeah, what did you think about Hitman? As soon as you watched it yesterday, it's quite fresh.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. There's one part film that really draws me. It draws me in films when smart characters just do dumb shit for the sake of doing dumb shit. It really bugged
that's
me.
That's your bag. That's so funny.
Oh, bro, it bugged me. When... So the way that... I'm going to spoil it a little bit.
Yeah. You're not going to watch it.
What's it on?
It's on Netflix.
It's on Netflix.
So
I was just doing that thing to piss you off. Because of what you said the other week. I remember you, like, you guys were talking about you on the pod.
Yeah.
So he's a fake hitman, and like people go up to him offering money to kill somebody for them. And obviously he's wired up. They get arrested, gets into jail, so on and so forth. He meets Madison. And obviously while talking to Madison, he realizes that all you really need to do is leave your husband. You're not about this. So he like throws a curve and makes sure that she doesn't put herself in a position where she'll get arrested for ordering the killing of her husband. Cool. Done your job. Move on. Why are you not dating the babes?
She's fire, bro.
She is fire, but come on, bro. Be a sensible human being.
She's fire, dog.
Be a sensible human being.
Are human beings sensible when they meet someone that's fire?
Are men sensible when they meet someone that's fire?
And if that's my answer, because obviously he's a very intelligent person, and he's portrayed in that film. It's like, that's such a dumb shit thing to do.
But don't you think people do dumb shit?
I know, and it bothers me. It bugs me. But again, it's not, but
I don't think that's your typical doing dumb shit in a film. That's not your like...
For somebody that's smart, yes. People do dumb shit, but you can't give me a very intelligent character who's
But remember, his girlfriend left him, so he's obviously still alone and seeking some sort of like romance in his life. And this beautiful, exotic, not necessarily my type, but just generally speaking, beautiful to the world, obviously naturally, comes into your world, and you're like, rah, she's fire, bruv. Come on, man. We've all been there. Not necessarily.
No, we have, but it's just dumb.
Are you a smart guy that's done dumb shit?
I want to say I'm a smart guy, but I've done dumb shit.
Naturally.
Yeah, but it's still, like, it bugs me to see it.
It bugs me to see it.
And obviously, he continuously kept doing dumb shit. However, I'm not going to hold that film to
thing.
Overall, it was a good film. Glenn Powell, right?
Yeah. Really good.
He's a really good actor. And guys already mentioned, like, he had to play so many different characters. And even the whole thing of, Are you who you really think you are? And the more that you pretend to be somebody else, do you become that person? Mm-hmm. He became that person, and you can see it through. So his normal life was being a teacher or a lecturer, and through his interaction with his students, you can see him slowly changing.
Yeah.
Even towards the end, he changed his hairstyle to look more like the character he was portraying. And I really did appreciate those really small minor details.
Because he liked who he became.
Yeah. He felt more confident. He felt like he was more of somebody by doing such things, especially when it was going completely against to what his ex was saying about him.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good film. It's enjoyable. I'll recommend for people to go watch it.
Don't
expect a Oscar nominee film.
It's a good film to watch at home. It's a really, just like you put on Netflix, it's actually the type of film that I could watch at home and have a really good time.
Yeah, man.
I would have liked to have seen it in the cinema. You could, like, there are some films that I feel like I have to watch in the cinema and I just can't watch at home.
But this is fine if you don't watch it in the cinema.
Yeah.
It's a good film.
It's a good Netflix release for sure.
I'm done.
So watch it with babes.
Yeah.
Hello, well. Okay. That's funny.
Brenda, babe.
Just a heads up for the audience and the listeners. We will be doing a Game of Thrones, no, a House of the Dragon sort of midway episode. So a few weeks time, we'll be back in the studio looking at House of the Dragon at the halfway point, because it's 8 episodes this series, which is somewhat disappointing, I think, for a lot.
It was ten last time.
Yeah, it was 10. You're thinking about Game of Thrones, which...
I'm thinking about The Boys, actually.
Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah.
The Boys is 8.
Oh,
it is, yeah. The Boys, because I'm also rewatching the Boys, so I haven't actually watched the new season yet.
It's decent. It's good. I liked it.
I'm
episode 4 is crazy.
Episode 4 is the best episode.
I'm at the end of episode of season 2. Yeah, I'm at the end of that. And what, do you know what's so funny? I went back to our like boy stuff like a year ago, and you were talking about like the same thing that like dumb characters doing blah blah blah. But it's the.
I think we're gonna get that at least. Damn, dog. We're gonna get that for Manny at least like every other episode.
I think that's what fucking most about Phil.
That's fine. I'll do this and then we'll pause. The Boys, you made a point that it doesn't matter in The Boys because the series is so serious, but it's also kind of a joke, you know?
Yeah, parody. It's a parody of superheroes.
Exactly. So, like, when you see, like Homelander splitting people in half, like, quite literally, and then he's so obsessed with finding Huey and Billy and blah, blah, and then he finds them and then takes his time. It's like, and then they always got... Bro, there's, like, it's season 2, bro, and he's seen them, like, 4 times, and they've got away... every single time. Do you know what I'm saying? It's Homelander, bruv.
Yeah, I do think that it's somewhat stretching now, like, as we watch the series and they just keep getting away. But I don't. At the same time, I'm still engaged.
Yeah, of course. But the novelty is going to wear off, though.
Okay. Like, even in the recent episode where Huey's...
Yeah. Okay, that I was fine with that.
No, I wasn't against it, but it's like a build-up of the situation where they managed to keep...
Get finding ways for him to get away. Yeah,
it's just.
That scene on the ice rink was so funny.
Yeah, it was crazy.
It was so funny. What do you think about episode 4?
Anthony Starr.
Yeah, get your social clip. Let's do it.
Hold up. I haven't seen it.
I think he can do this without spoiling.
I can do it without spoiling. Anthony Starr, given an Emmy right now.
Why so?
He's before. Okay, so without spoiling too much. Well, next time we record, you would have to catch up.
Oh, I'll be done.
By the time we do like the House of the Dragon stuff and The Boys, you should be...
I'll be caught up.
His performance as Homelander, he just...
And the storytelling for him as well. I really appreciate it, actually.
His actual character is a world... Like, he's one of my favourite villains in TV.
Understandable.
Like, he's one of the best. And he's acting... It's so weird because I just can't believe it. He's a normal person in real life. I can't. You can't be.
Do you know, I followed him on Instagram.
And then he said that, like, when people walk up to him saying that, oh, I'm surprised you're not liking real life. He's like, okay, thanks for not thinking I'm a psychopath. Yeah. It's like, why are you shocked?
Bro, his Insta is so wholesome. He's always got his kids and everything, bro. Like, he's chilling, like, with his family.
Bro, he has, like, 3 bodies underneath his house somewhere. He must do, because there's no way you can play that character in that way.
Bro, his Insta
and not be
is so...
And not be fighting demons.
It's so wholesome.
It's an act, bro. It's a hat. It's okay.
But he is Homelander.
But his performance in episode 4, I don't even want to say chilling is the right word, even menacing. I don't know, because it's not one emotion when I'm thinking about his performance. Like, he had to hit quite a few ranges, but it was so Homelander.
Yeah.
That's the performance. Like, he embodied that person, and everything that he did throughout that episode, it just felt like perfect for his character.
Yeah.
But yeah.
You know what I find interesting as well is his disdain for human beings.
Yeah.
And any concept of him or Ryan being human, but he still has so many human traits.
I think that's what it is,
which makes him so interesting.
I think that's why he has such a disdain for humans, because he sees himself as human partly, but he wants to distance himself so much from human beings that he has to create this level of hatred towards them, where he in fact is very, very human. Well, he just has superpowers,
and he says multiple times that he's a god. You know what I mean?
He wants to believe he is a god, but because he constantly does human-like things, it grows resentment not just for himself but for human beings as well. And that's why he constantly has, like, when he has conversation with himself in the mirror, and obviously the other version of himself then, like, bro, fix up. You're still holding on to these human-like things. It's because he has like a great resentment not only for himself but for human beings, for him being such a normal person.
Yeah.
And I think it's to search for like a motherly. And the embodiment of a motherly instinct to sort of look after him and take care of him is the most human thing. It's the most human feeling, or one of the most human feelings.
Orgasms over milk, bruv. Genuinely, that's nuts. Like, yo, that's crazy.
It's nuts.
Like,
it's not milky.
Yeah. Well done.
Like, I thought it was just breast milk, yeah. And then he went in the fridge, yeah, and picked up normal milk, like normal blue milk, fam, full fat in that, yeah. Okay, and just. He took one sip and then he was like, I was like, yo, nigga, god damn.
Yeah, I remember when he fingered the milk.
Yeah, bro.
Yeah, he's a strange guy. But yeah. How do you do this?
man looked at the camera.
How do you do this? Sleep at night.
How does the director go, all right, and action on the milk?
Bro, how do you portray this character?
Toby, clip this up, please. Thank you, bro.
Hi, I'm Donald Glover, and you are watching or listening to the Post-Credit Scene.
So, the second half of this episode, I hope you enjoyed the first half, firstly. We very much did so. A conversation that Hussam has wanted to have with us is the state of cinema or theatres, depending on where you are in the world, in 2024. The state of the world of film. I think in recent weeks, finally, we've actually been a lot more focused on TV just because of the releases.
Yeah.
And we're always inundated with new releases, whether it's sort of Apple TV or Netflix or Disney Plus.
Well, there hasn't been small releases in film. Like there's been like good films with big casts in them. Sorry, not good films, but like a good, how can I explain it?
Blockbusters.
Like, yeah. They just haven't done well enough for us to keep notice.
I mean, I get your point. I do understand. But I was alluding to this talk of streaming because I think streaming has definitely just had, and it will be part of the conversation, streaming has had a massive impact on the way we consume media in 2024 and beforehand and afterhand as well. So yeah, we're just going to examine film in 2024, focusing on what makes a successful film in your eyes, what makes a flop film, and the impact of streaming platforms on traditional media, as well as, I guess, also, and I guess the streaming impacts sort of terrestrial cable TV as well, but that's another conversation. One of the interesting things that we have to note in this episode is that blockbusters need to gross over half of their budget to turn over a profit.
Yeah.
Which I think it's going to be important for us if we are going to sort of reference sort of box office numbers and so on and so forth. And there are some notes on that for us as well. But for you guys, firstly, I guess the first point of conversation, open floor, open conversation, is what makes a successful film? Firstly, in the eyes of you guys, and I guess also in the eyes of studios, what makes it a successful film release? Firstly, for you, let's forget studios. That's a bit more headache. Think about yourself. What makes a successful film for you? Is it just making a good film? Because good films don't always do us in terms of box office numbers, right?
Yeah, even when you look at like film bro films, actually, initially a lot of them don't do great numbers. Like when you even look at films like The Holdovers and what's the other one that you watched as well?
The Holdovers came American out, Fiction. Past Lives, American Fiction, some of the best films I saw this year.
But you know, those films won't hit over a
billion.
100 mil even.
Yeah.
You know? So like it's those films, they are seen as a success because they're critically...
You think they're film bro films?
I think so, because they all purposely came out around the same time.
So Basola's a film bro girl.
It didn't come out around the same time. They just came out in the UK at the same time.
Yeah, but in...
Strategically in America...
To fit award season, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, in America, they would have come out within the time period of like, oh, we can... fit into the box office,
October,
into the sort of Oscars conversation. So.
Yeah, I believe the deadline is November 16th or something like that. So it all had to be out prior to that. Which
I believe they all were in America, to be fair. Yeah,
and I believe that in order for it to pass, it needs to have a screen test in a festival, or something, which is in like August.
All of those films that we discussed would have been at one of the film festivals, so...
Facts. So, like, just in that regard, yeah, I think they do count as, like, film bro films. Which, by the way, I don't care. Like, I fuck of it, you know? But those are seen as critically successful.
What about, from your perspective?
For me, it's a film that can bring out people to the cinema. I think that's key. That's my opinion, though. Like, my opinion, like, I don't care too, like, I did during COVID and during whatever, like, for streaming, but I don't care too much for streaming stuff. I watch it because, obviously, this is what we do, and I love film and TV, so the convenience of it is great, sick, but I will pick cinema every day of the week.
Save that thought, because there is a section on that, so save that particular thought about going to the cinema that will come up.
Sick. But yeah, so like for me, like it's a film that can bring you out. It's a film that can garner opinions. Like you.
So like
tell,
a Dune Part Two.
Yeah, you can definitely tell. Yeah, when you go to cinema and so someone's like seeing something and you go to work, right? And then you know someone will go, oh yo, how was the film last night? And if you don't give more than three words. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's a good film. But if you sit there and whether good or bad, and you go, do you know what? Blah 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 blah. I think that's what makes a good film.
So whether it either it's critically acclaimed or it divides opinion is normally the premise of a film that could be deemed good because somewhat some way it's creating a conversation around film and getting people into the cinema.
Exactly. And
but when they're then. There are times where bad films or mediocre films or films with higher expectations. So let's use the example of Doctor Strange, The Multiverse of Madness. Yeah. Box office wise, that film did very
crazy.
Well. Because of the expectation, right? We all went to that film thinking, wow, Wanda and Doctor Strange? Two of like the coldest characters
and the multiverse one,
in Marvel.
That was new.
Did very well.
Yeah.
But in terms of as a film, I don't think it's as bad as people made it out to be, but it definitely didn't hit the heights that I would have wanted from that particular film, from Doctor Strange, a character that I think is so cold, Wanda. We saw WandaVision. That took over the lockdown period, right? The first period of lockdown, yeah, when WandaVision came out, unbelievable. So when you marry the two, then you got Marvel, you're like, wow, we're going to get an amazing film here. It wasn't that. So would you still say that's a successful film because it did well box office wise, but it didn't meet the expectations of the audience?
That's just messy and
no. Answer the question, bro.
No.
Okay, cool.
I'm saying that's just messy and for Cristiano, like you're just like an enemy of your own success. Like you're already successful before you even walked in, right? And then that means that all you're doing is you're creating automatic, opinions. I think that is more of studio failure, whereas I think the crowd, I think it was a crowd success because of who the studio is, of what they've done previously, blah, 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 blah. So, yeah, those ones are really tough to judge, but ironically, those are probably the films that are keeping cinemas alive.
Oh, as in the big Godzillas and King Kongs and Planet of the Apes, the type of films that aren't necessarily what you'd consider great, groundbreaking cinema, but then you've got, if you compare A Past Lives to A Bad Boys 4, I'm going to assume, we can maybe check some stats, I'm going to assume Bad Boys 4 is going to do much, much better than A Past Lives. But if you're asking someone that's going to watch a film, you're going to say Past Lives is the better film.
Yeah.
But it's the big box office films that tend to keep cinema alive, is I guess your point.
Yeah, like, come on, man. Like, it's, I don't know what the stats are.
I've got something for Godzilla here. Godzilla times King Kong, The New Empire. It was a budget of $200 million, allegedly, according to IMDb and columns, but grossed over $700 million worldwide.
God damn.
Which shows, I guess, it shows the leverage and the popularity of the MonsterVerse, and obviously the sort of spectacular action that this particular type of film would produce in comparison to A Past Lives, which a lot of people, Manny might would agree, is a better film. I don't know if you saw Godzilla King.
Did you see Godzilla?
It's not for you. It's not for you. It's not a film for you whatsoever. But again, it's an interesting conversation around, well, we can be snobbish to certain films like a Godzilla, but they are kind of still always going to be necessary because they're going to draw the crowds.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an interesting conversation for sure. Manny, any thoughts on what we've just spoken about in terms of what makes a successful film? Firstly, for you, and I guess if you can peep into the perspective of the studio as well.
I think what makes something a successful film, I think I'm going to speak in terms of outside of me, it's very relative to the film itself. It's also relative to the budget. Like, for example, I think the Marvels did like 100 mil, but obviously they cost a lot more.
More.
That was a big
flop.
Yeah, it cost a lot more. So it's a flop relative to the budget and the expectation they had for a film.
Yeah, they got sort of wasted money on fucking... Anyway, let me get into it.
I don't know what the budget for Ryan Lane would have been, but it would have been a lot less. And I'm sure it would have made a lot less money than the Marvels, but I don't think there's many people out there that wouldn't class Ryan Lane as a success. Or the same thing with...
But it's the ratio you're saying.
Yeah, so like, it's relative... Like, something successful is relative to the project itself in terms of what, how much you're putting in expectations that you plan to get out. So in that aspect of things, in terms of what makes something successful, it's based on a project by project basis. But for me personally,
it's grossed over a million apparently.
Right in?
Yeah, apparently.
Wow.
Apparently. Worldwide.
Right. That's
it's quite impressive.
That's very impressive.
What was the budget?
I'm trying to bear with me.
It's probably like 50 bags, fam.
Free spec matters. But yeah, for me personally, what makes a successful film? Again, it doesn't necessarily, like, there's films that, there's actually, like, I don't know, like, action's not necessarily a genre that I care that much about, but still at any point in genre, it's still a type of cinema that is important. It's just more about the purpose of the films and what it serves for the people that are watching it and what people take out from it. So I can go and compare, I don't know, what action film I watched that I really enjoyed.
John Wick 4?
I watched John Wick 4. I watched John Wick 1. I heard a good John Wick 4.
Oh, yeah, you love it when you
I really enjoyed John Wick 1. I really did enjoy John Wick 1.
4 is crazy.
And I know I'm going to enjoy it.
Yeah,
So for example, I compare John Wick 4 to a Past Lives, who are completely two different films. But what people take away from those films in comparison to, I don't know, the Marvels, in comparison to Drive Away Dolls, in comparison to films that just don't deliver in terms of story, Love and Thunder. Oh, yeah. But yeah, it's like, so what makes a film successful to me
is relative.
Yeah, it's relative, but it just depends on, not necessarily just about the story, but it says what the content of the film is and how people that are watching it come away from it. So yeah, it's very relative to a person.
So it's kind of the idea of, well, firstly, you have to consider why people would go and watch a particular film, which is the context. But then there's also the sort of perspective of studios who, essentially, it's all about the numbers. Like, we can hire a director because we want to make a great film, but we still want, at the end of the day, we do need numbers on board. But I also think studios understand, somewhat, because I think studios are very faulty at the same time, they understand there is a need to have a balance. You can't just continuously make big blockbuster movies because they cost a lot of money, and that cuts into your budget of the year. So sometimes you do need to make lower budget films, which are great stories. For example, what's the film we watched? The French film we watched.
Anatomy of a Fall.
I'm going to assume that's a much lower budget film, just based on the aesthetics and the look and the cast in comparison to a Bad Boys 4. But you're going to have to pay Will Smith. I don't even want to know how much money you're going to have to pay Will Smith. But in comparison,
25.
The cast in You're a freak. In comparison to Anatomy of a Fall, you're not going to have to pay the cast as much. You're not going to have to use a big CG sort of CGI and pay CGI people to do their job. VFX, you're not going to have cast, set, film, a production, make the film happen. And I think, again, studios understand there's a necessity for a balance. We can't just go all the way with 20 blockbusters in a year because it's just not financially
studios
viable.
Studios would obviously rather spend 20 mil and make 500, right? Like, look at Deadpool 1, you know, where they strip back Ryan's budget like 8 times, bro, because they were like, we'll see. And I forgot what the budget was for that one, okay, but I think it was... I don't think it went over a 100 mil. Like, I'm pretty sure it didn't. Like I'm pretty sure it was like 40 or something like that. And then it was a $1 billion film. Billion dollar.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, after that, yeah. Even successful films as well, yeah. It gives a platform to the writers, directors, having the main cast that are in that film, because they're now seen as like sure things. Like, all right, cool, we'll bring them over here to go write this or do this or blah, 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 blah. And then there's that immense pressure again. When the problem is that when the studio sometimes overbacks you.
Right.
You know what I mean? They'll be like, yo, we gave you 40 mil this time, here's 200 mil.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's like, well, why don't you just keep the same formula?
Right.
You know, because they probably made with that 40 mil, they've probably tried to make a 200 mil film off that 40 mil. And I've been in that like world where like you try and make things work with the budget that you have, and then you actually put in more effort because you're just trying to finesse everything. Do you know what I'm saying? Whereas like if you're given 200 mil, you're just more relaxed and you're going, yeah, cool. And then afterwards you start to worry because you go, raw, we spent 200, we need to make it back, you know. And it's just a mad conflict, man. Like, yeah,
I think one of the things that has sparked the conversation around the state of cinema and so on and so forth has been the box office numbers for Mad Max Furiosa.
Yeah, that
Furiosa, sorry, shall I say. And then people are like, oh,
this film should have done well because the critics received it well, the fans and the audience received it as well. It was definitely a film that was generally reviewed and adored by fans, shall I say. But in terms of box office numbers, it did 25.6 million over Memorial Day in the USA, and it marked its lowest opening on Memorial Day since the release of Casper in 1995, which sparked the whole conversation around cinema's dying, blah, blah, blah. And then a few weeks later, we get Bad Boys 4,
which is
a box office smash. So do you think people are being a bit maybe reactionary and over the top in the concept of cinema is dying?
No.
Or do you think cinema is dying? Do you think there's a way to potentially... I don't think it's ever going to go back to what it was, but do you think there's a way in which studios, critics, people like ourselves, I guess, to an extent, and other creators within our realm in the UK and abroad, can help to remedy some of the difficult moments that cinema is enduring?
I think one of the things they can do is leave films in the cinema for longer, because there's times where films will be released in a cinema that might not catch on right away, but because of word of mouth of people saying this is a good film, it picks up momentum, and then you get more people going to the cinema from a film that got
any released. Examples that come to mind that you think could have been in the cinema longer,
like even films that we watched at the beginning of the year that got re-released because of the Oscars coming up. If they were in the cinema for longer, and then I was hearing about these films, I would have watched it in the original run rather than coming off cinema.
So like Holdovers, for example.
I think Holdovers was originally released in January. I don't think it was re-released.
No, yeah, it came. It got like a day in the cinema as well, like one day before the Oscars.
Oh, okay. Then it came out earlier. But yeah, if it was on for longer, I would have gone the original run. I don't think Past Lives was in the cinema for that long when originally.
Bro,
that would have been last year it came out.
Last year, but it wasn't.
American Fiction was only showing in Cousins.
No, I saw it in Cineworld. Yeah, I saw it in Cineworld as well.
After
our screening, their release, but it was in other cinemas as well.
Fair enough.
Yeah, they were just like a studio backing it or production behind it or whatever.
Nice.
Yeah. And now there's very few films that stay in a cinema.
Unless they're big smashes.
Unless they're big smash hits. And even with the films that sometimes do stay in the cinema for a little while, it's hard to find where in which cinema they are. They're like specific cinemas. There was one film that, a Japanese film that I watched, Something Killed, I can't remember. Evil does not exist. And it wasn't in any cinema world. It wasn't in any cinema near mine. I had to go find some random cinema in central London to go watch it. But if there was availability to it, I'll be able to watch it and probably recommend it to, because it was a great film, recommend to a lot of people. I think availability is definitely a huge thing as well, because a lot more films are going straight into streaming not long after being out. For example, Hitman wasn't out in cinema that long, and I know, I'm aware there is a Netflix film. It is a Netflix film specifically, and it was only in cinema for a short period of time. But if you stay in cinema longer and give me the more opportunities to go watch it, I would have gone sooner.
Right? It's when we came out of COVID, where streaming was like was thriving, right? They were making ridiculous money, okay, or films that were just in the back shelf, and series, sorry. And then you come out of that, right? And then like cinemas are almost pleading for help. You know what I mean? Okay, they're begging everyone. They actually kind of relied mainly on Disney, because Disney held back around. I think they had the most out of all of the studios, with obviously Marvel and Star Wars and stuff. They had like 40 projects that were just sitting there, and cinemas were almost like begging them to like release these films, okay, not for the sake of like good cinema, but just to save it, right? Save it financially, sorry. And then like you have this weird middle ground where the streaming services they start to realize, oh, okay, cool, if all of these studios release these massive things, and blah, 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 and they partnership with like Sky and, but you know, before HBO Max, whatever, they're going to have to, as in, people might go away from streaming, right? So then you started realizing the Prime Video, Apple and Netflix started doing like these 2-week cinema releases, okay, blah, blah, blah. But then at the same time as well, now they're almost like, do we want to continue that and keep promoting people to go to the cinema, or do we want to keep promoting our service of being at home and watching it there?
But the thing is, even with that, doesn't make much of a difference to streaming, and it's been shown in the past. Like, for example, Anyone But You done well in the cinema, but also still done really well on streaming sites. Mm. Dune done well in the cinema and is going to do well on streaming sites. All these films that do well in the cinema, they're still going to do well in streaming because people still watch films at home. The only thing that's harming is cinema goers. It's not necessarily going to harm the streamers because they're still going to... Because with streaming, because it already comes out after it's already been released in cinema, so there's not that immediate hype of going to watch it the first day. Mm. So people are going to take the time to watch it. So it doesn't really affect streaming, and it's been shown with previous films that have been in cinema and gone into streaming afterwards. So there's not enough incentive or logic to me for why films are not in cinema longer instead of going straight to streaming. Yeah. Apart from greed and being afraid in terms of that course. Potentially having an effect on them financially, but it doesn't. It's proven time and time again that films that do well in cinema will always do well in streaming sites. It doesn't have much of an effect.
Yeah, but again, like I said, it's just that naive view of it. Do you know what I mean? Okay, and bro, I'm absolutely like with you here, and the reason why like I kind of brought this conversation in like the group chat as well was like mainly because like I was watching this guy doing like a review on it, he was doing a review on the state of cinema, right? And he was talking about it was all sparked from like Mad Max and Bad Boys and how films like Fall Guy and Planet of the Apes and that kind of stuff, if they were released like a couple of years ago, they would have got a lot more buzz,
you know, naturally.
Okay, and it's true because like Fall Guy was a solid rom-com drama. It was a good film, right? Okay, and like it would have done like well, but so like his point was that you're kind of stuck in this like middle ground because studios want to spend less on films to make more now because they're scared of like not
you have to cross over half, right?
Exactly. And then also studios are reliant now on franchises and sequels financially.
Planet of the Apes, Marvel, Star Wars. Well, Star Wars hasn't been in cinema for years, but
Bad Boys even. Okay, even Mad Max.
I think there's only been like one film this year that's done really well that wasn't part of a franchise
or sequel. Yeah, okay, there you go. But they are relying on them because they're proven formulas, right?
And the problem is where you might have to play some onus on audiences, yeah, is the people are going to watch the sequels and the franchises. We will come in the studio and talk about The Holdovers, a film I adored, or American Fiction, a film I adored, or Past Lives, a film that I loved watching, Anatomy of a Fall. We will talk about those films. Critics will talk about these films as well and give them great reviews. People won't go and watch them.
Well, but then I'm so sorry, guys, but this leads to my point.
Surely there's some onus on audiences who complain about sequels and franchises but still go and watch them.
But my issue, again, will be more so with availability, one, because a lot more money put into the as in marketing,
yeah,
and even staying in the cinema. So my issue is that availability for audience to go watch this film, is it there enough in comparison to... I guarantee you, Bad Boys 4 will still be in the cinema in a month's time. I can't say the same thing.
Facts, because it's a good film.
But even like for example, The Fall Guy is still in the... It's a good film, but The Fall Guy is still in the cinema now. There's other films that have been, because they have the budget and the market and the marketing to have these films on for a long time. But these other films that are not sequels, that are not backed by these big studios, don't have the budget or the marketing to stay in cinema for too long. And I think that's what the issue is. I get that audience should be able to go watch these non-sequels.
Yeah, what I'm saying though is not... I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm saying you have to place some onus, like somewhat, on audiences who go and watch the big sequels, because there is the opportunities there to go and watch. I'm not saying...
But they also killed them, guys. So like, if the second one's shit...
We're not disagreeing. I'm making the point of you can't just not place any onus on audiences to go and watch particular films when they're there.
No. But it's not a complete studio's diverse film. Okay, it's the studio's kind of like thing, responsibility to be like, oh, yo, instead of a sequel for this exact same film, okay, we are going to apply the same finesse, the same skill set, okay, to provide you a separate piece of artwork. Then, in my opinion, okay, especially from like 2000 to like 2012-ish, right? Then you actually get more valued sequels because we're not coming every year, right? Okay, like Bad Boys was 1998, 2002 or 3, and then 2015, 16, and then 2024, bruv. Do you know what I'm saying?
You do, like, realize Bad Boys 3 came out like 2021?
No, 2019.
So it was near enough near the lockdown period.
Around about,
yeah.
Yeah, but Bad Boys 2 and 3,
there was a big one. There's a big gap between them.
There's a huge gap between them, okay?
But Sony didn't even believe in Bad Boys in the first place.
Exactly.
That's another conversation for another time.
But my point is, you do something, it does well. You don't have to act on it immediately, right? But then the problem is, okay, in 2008 or something, okay, whatever it was, we got Frozen, right? Frozen does what, two billion or something like that, okay? They didn't release yet Frozen 2, I didn't even know this, to like eight years afterwards. Do you know what I'm saying? Because they were milking it, bruv. Do you know what I'm saying? But in that time, Disney, or whoever it was, sorry, okay, were able to pump so many films out that weren't for sequels. However, I will say Disney did rely on reboots. Do you know what I mean? Okay, for a lot of period, but it was for new audiences. Do you know what I mean? It's such a difficult thing, but like, it goes back to my point where the guy was saying like, oh, like, there's a responsibility. Okay, where studios don't want to spend peas, cool, but arguably the cinemas need the studios to spend more money, as you said, on the marketing, on the press, on all of that stuff, okay, to get people to go to the cinema. If every single film had a Will Smith, Kevin Hart, Dwayne Johnson, a press run, trust me, they would make peace. You think it's a coincidence, bro? But people are, especially us, man, people are constantly cussing out the Kevin Hart and Dwayne films, okay, for just being kind of like lifeless and just being what they are, da, 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 you know what I'm saying? All of that kind of stuff, okay. But guess what? They do numbers because they are, it's not, they push those films.
Because of who they are.
Of course, but they push those films, okay?
But it's also,
a lot of the films, okay, that we're talking about.
You push a Davine Joy Randolph in people's faces. This, bro, is no disrespect to her because she's an amazing actress. And you push a Will Smith, people are going to go and watch the Will Smith clip. People,
press,
it's human beings, it's human nature.
It's up to us as well. It's up to kind of like new press. It's up to, it's up to.
But that's the exact point that I was essentially getting towards. Is firstly, the reason we do this pod is because like we want to be the face of film TV and blah blah, etc. etc. I think you can't just completely place all onus on studios because I think they have a big responsibility. But I also think audiences, we do reviews every. Manny's got his own TikTok. I've got my own. We do the podcast. We talk about shit all the time that isn't just the big blockbusters.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We do.
Yeah.
People still don't go and watch Holdovers. I know loads of people that haven't seen that film. Mm-hmm. And I've spoken to loads of people about the film. I said, oh, this film's great. You know, when things, oh, what film did you go and watch today? Oh, I watched The Holdovers. I loved it. Great film. Blah, blah, blah.
And it's funny because everybody will watch the fucking.
But when you were saying about The Holdovers, it wasn't in cinema when you were letting people know.
Yeah, it was. But in the UK, it was.
But it wasn't in cinema for that long. For
it had like a month. Like, I think it had like a month and a half, roughly.
Max.
No, it was more than that, definitely. But I remember it was like more than that. And then it got its re-release just before the Oscars. It had like a month and a bit.
I couldn't watch.
American Fiction was in it.
Cinemas here, though. Like,
oh yeah, that's a problem because it's subjective to areas as well, which I think is the issue.
And my thing is, I will struggle to put the onus on the audience.
I'm not saying putting all onus. Oh, no, you're taking that wrong.
No,
I'm saying there is a
perspective.
But I feel like the onus is so small on the audience that I can't even bring it up. For me personally,
I'll disagree.
And I think mainly is the issue is availability. I don't think it is, bro.
I think people want to see big blockbusters. That's it.
Of course they want to see big blockbusters. But one of the main reasons why sometimes people like a lot of casual watchers don't know what films to watch, and they're recommended films by the marketing and what's in the cinema. If a film is in a cinema for 3 months in comparison to a film that's in a month, they're more likely going to see the film in the 3 months.
But I'm not disagreeing with you.
I know, but I know you're saying that there should be some onus on the audience.
Yes.
But I feel like the onus is so small that for me personally, it's not worth bringing up. I feel like the focus should only be in the fact of the marketing and the fact that
I'll disagree with you on that one.
These films are not in the cinema long enough.
I would somewhat disagree with you on that personally.
That's fair.
I'm definitely in the middle here. Like I do think that there should be at least, if we're going like 100% and there's three characters here, which is the audience, the cinemas and the studios, I think it's 60% studio, 20% audience and 20% cinemas that have to take like responsibility or have to change things in order to lean towards it. And the studio thing, okay, is everything. It's from budget of the films to the creation to the marketing to the press to everything from that side. And then from the cinemas side of things, okay, is that they need to become more adaptable. Like what happened to like Orange Wednesdays and that kind of stuff?
They still exist, but I think it's more so like, yeah, it's whatever network you're with. Like I think
Odeon do Saver Mondays.
Yeah, there's a few things out there, but it's are people aware? Like before, you used to just get a text from like a T-Mobile, and you just know.
That's perfect. So then, exactly how I only know that because I'm signed up to all these things, right? But previously, especially now with the death of TV because of damn streaming. Okay, you don't get these ads all the time. You don't get to watch trailers. That's, oh my God, that's even a big thing too, okay? Bro, like, when I was growing up, okay, I never went on YouTube to watch a trailer. It was on TV, bro. Do you know what I mean? It was ads. I would watch...
But we don't watch TV anymore, bro.
That's my point.
Be put trailers on TV, but people don't watch TV.
No, but that's my point. We need to find better ways, okay, to show these things, okay, and like you said, if it means triple, bro, even buses now. Yeah, buses show more about political woke.
No.
Than film.
No, it's nah, bro. I see.
It's true,
bro. For like a 2 month period, I used to walk and see the holdovers. I used to see holdovers on the buses. I think I've seen Mad Max Furiosa quite recently. I've seen Bad Boy, bro. They still use buses.
By the way, sorry. On,
I would have to disagree
on,
with
on
that one.
Mad Max. Yeah, sorry. You made the point, okay, that Dwayne Rock Johnson, okay, and Kevin Dwayne. Hart, Dwayne the Rock. Thingy
and Mad Max,
no, and Kevin Hart. Okay,
you said Mad Max,
yeah. So, that those films do well because of who they are, right, bro? Anya Taylor-Joy, she's got over 20 million followers.
Incredible, she's good actress, really good.
Look at her Mad Max,
Chris Hemsworth as well.
Oh my God,
how can you forget Chris Hemsworth, bro?
look at the Mad Max promo, it was minuscule, bro. Look at Will Smith's page, for Bad Boys, you laugh at it, bro. It's embarrassing,
bro. Yeah, Will Smith went crazy,
bro. He went nuts, fam. But that's my point, okay? It's like, That lands in the studio's fault. Do you know what I mean? Do these actors give a fuck? You know what I mean? Okay, that's how, like, bro, like, come on, man. Like, I'm so
don't
sorry,
do your Will Smith thing here, please. You're gonna do your Will Smith thing.
No, it's not the Will Smith thing.
I'm just winding you up.
How do you supposed to spell her damn name, bruv?
Anya.
Yeah.
Anya.
Yeah.
Taylor.
Yeah, go.
Fucking hell.
She's got 11.6 here, okay.
It's a big difference from 20, by the way. Just saying. Don't mind me.
But look, when you go down, just fashion babes. And then look, small scenes from the thingy, and then, yeah, safe. It's like, come on, man. It's like, what's going on, bruv, yeah? And when you go to Will, and Will is, you could.
Yeah, first person shooting mode. Do you know the vibes? First person shooting mode.
All of this first is Bad Boys.
That's
50 posts, bruv. The hell's going on?
Yeah, but that's and there's a difference there. Bad Boys is
wanted to do well because he knows that he can make it well.
That's his thing as well.
But look, why do you think, bro? Kevin Hart admitted it, bro. He said, "Yo, I learned this global press thing from Will. He taught me how to do that." Do you understand?
Anya Taylor-Joy is just playing a role in a film.
I'm just saying.
So again, that
these,
if you're
these
saying
actors, if they want to, come back.
She got her bag. She's good, and she did. She's not gonna lose her bag.
She's not gonna get her bag over 10 years, okay? If everything she does, okay, hits that number, I promise you, it won't happen. It won't happen.
You're judging that one. You're judging this on this one film, though.
Can you name me like five actors, okay, that was stars, and then after two, three,
yeah, you fall off. It's the game, dog.
But that's my point. If you don't want to fall off, okay, if you want to at least not be a critical success, at least be a financial one. You have to put in the work. I'm so sorry.
I'm not saying I disagree with you, but then you also put yourself in the perspective of an actor where you have to do fucking how many junkets, travel the world to do all of that.
It's your job. You get paid 20 mil. It's your job.
But I'm not disagreeing with you. What I'm saying, you put yourself in that same perspective.
If you convince me to watch your film, sit there for a day and do interviews.
Maybe they just don't care enough. Maybe they think that the money they get paid is enough.
But that's my point. So they become part of the problem. I mean, how can, and then, okay, they wear a 10K dress to the damn Golden Globes. Okay.
What has that got to do with
it? And they'll do that and then be shocked that their film hasn't been...
What has the 10K dress got to do with how the film does?
My point is that he just said they get paid well, blah blah blah.
No, you said that. He didn't say that.
No, he did. He said that they're happy with the
He didn't say so. Is that what he said? Fine. Anyway, continue. Doesn't matter. Go on. Make your point.
My point is okay, is that they come with this happy piece. Okay, sit down.
Yeah, they get paid well for the job.
And then they're shocked that nobody has watched their films. And then
do you think Anya Taylor-Joy, as an example, is shocked that people that Mad Max Furiosa hasn't done necessarily well, especially when you come.
I think the whole studio is shocked.
That studio, different from her. But then you also consider the first Mad Max film didn't do well in cinemas either.
But
not the first one, but the one with Tom Hardy. Be specific, because I know there's ones before that, right? With Mel Gibson.
It had high critical.
And so did this. So did this, bro. Yeah,
Stop it.
Go, stop it.
Let's look at.
Let's move this conversation on. One of the things that I wanted to talk about is the declining cinema attendance, which is something we've kind of delved into. One of the things that we wanted to talk about was obviously the impact of streaming platforms. Do you think, how big an impact has streaming had on just the whole concept of going to the cinema for you guys? For you as an individual, perspectively, forget audiences, but you as an individual, Do you sit at home and you're like,
listen, I want to watch a film right now. Let me go open up.
No,
Netflix instead of going to cinema.
Along those lines, but it's like, so let's say Mad Max Furiosa could be coming onto HBO Max or Sky TV in like 3 weeks' time.
Mm-hmm.
I could either wait 3 weeks and watch it at home, or get ready, go to cinema, bring my snacks or buy my snacks, watch the film for 2.5 hours and come back home. Which would you... Do you put yourself in that perspective of just you as an individual? How big an impact has streaming had on you and the way you view cinema today?
It done me for a while, and then I got out of it, for sure. Like, okay. It done me where I was doing that. Oh, I can just watch it. Like, I'm paying £12 a month for Netflix or whatever it is, and I'm paying...
£12 a month?
Whatever it is, man. 11... Oh, no, man. It just comes out now at this point. Disney Plus. Blah, blah. Nah, it's me, dog. It's me.
I still get shocked at when I see a film in cinema and then I find out it's on streaming like a few weeks later.
Pisses me off.
It still spins me to this day.
Yeah.
That the transfer is that quick. If there's like a... If I know there's a film that's going to come on streaming site, it doesn't... It doesn't excite me to not watch it in the cinema. Like, I will still...
Do you know what, for me, yeah? As a, like... I don't know if it's me being weird. There are some films I really struggle to watch at home.
Mm.
Okay.
So, like... I can watch TV at home. Naturally, or series. Because I feel as though my mind has been processed to say... Or I've been sort of processed, like... Okay, I'm going to watch... Presumed Innocent, which is a new Apple Plus TV series, really good. Jake Gyllenhaal, superb. Go check it out. Apple TV, if you want to sponsor the pod as well.
Did you finish Dark Matter? Or did you want to watch
it? I did the first two and I liked it and I haven't finished it, but I will get to it. Good. I know you was a bit... I can watch the TV series at home and it's like, yeah, but watching films at home sometimes for me is really difficult.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I think it's because we can space out a series over time. You can watch like an episode here, episode there.
That's true.
Or sometimes episode a week. So you can watch the episode in the evening and then the next week you're watching the next episode, right?
Yeah.
Or you can either pam it out, bam. Watching a movie is like 2.5 hours of just sitting there at home for me to watch one film. It's quite difficult.
Yeah.
But if I'm in the cinema, I've committed.
Yeah.
I'm here. I have no choice but to actually...
Financially, physically, your body's there. You know what I'm saying?
At home, you have the option to stop it.
I could just stop, watch something else, go play PlayStation, go make some dinner, make some food, go shopping. If I'm in the cinema, I'm here, I'm locked in. Yeah. My phone's on this side of it, so I'm not looking.
I do that as well.
And I'm born, man, I'm here. Look.
Bro, it's for me,
and I think it's a different experience.
It's for me, like, obviously this is obviously like, personal, but for me it's therapy, bro.
Yeah, you're going through issues, I know it's tough. It's,
anyways, okay. But like, I work a lot and I do whatever, and whatever it is, there's a cinema right next to my office.
Quick John didn't come watch it with me.
Quick time, just, yo, listen, man's got a free pass. Okay, I'll cover you still.
I was being so stupid. But yeah, you played yourself into it. Go on.
Yeah, yeah. Like,
what about the cost of cinema as an impact?
Well, what
cinema cost? It doesn't
not for you, but for audiences.
How much did you pay?
I think 17 a month.
Yeah, same. I pay 16 a month for the Odeon card. I would prefer to pay for Cineworld cards, but obviously I'm close.
Yeah, whatever card you got, it's a card, right? A card is...
Yeah.
But yeah, financially, aside of me paying 17 a month, like, I'm fine to do. Cinema is hella expensive.
It's not expensive, man.
It's hella expensive.
Bro, it's ridiculous, bro.
If you want to take something with you, that's an easy £25-30 altogether.
Which, by the way, is nuts. Like, that is nuts. Crazy, bro. And there's a few cinemas, okay, that are closing. By the way, did you know that Cineworld own Picture House?
I did not know that.
Yeah, which is fucking crazy, by the way. Okay. But apparently, like, not a lot of picture houses are shutting down this year.
What are they going to turn into, Cineworld?
I have no idea. But even the Picture House Fulham Road, where I don't know if you guys came to when I held that event for the YouTube thing. What was it called? Oh my God. With Simon Fredericks. God damn it.
Bus thing?
Hmm?
The bus thing? No, that was at university.
Oh, damn it, don't worry. Okay. But yeah, we held the Prem there and now it's shutting down. And that was only like 2 years old.
Okay.
Which is nuts. Yeah.
Why do you guys like going to the cinema? What is it for you that that makes the cinematic experience differ from watching something at home? This will be the sort of closing bit of the conversation for us.
Because you're watching how films were intended to be made to be watched.
Exactly.
And I feel that experience is completely different in terms of, like, one, the quality of the screen that you're watching it on. Like, a 50-inch Samsung TV is not going to compare to the screens in the cinema.
Surround sound.
Surround sound. Yeah, the sound. And just even the ambience. Like, what I started to do when I'm home, and see, I'm even more intentional in terms of, like, making my living room space feel like a bit more like a cinema in terms of, like, just getting black
closing down, the blinds and so on,
getting,
yeah,
getting blacked out curtains. I'm gonna get, like, surround sounds. I'm gonna sell my TV and get a projector literally for films, just to get a feeling closer to the cinema. You don't get that normally if you're watching TV at 4 p.m. on a Tuesday.
Yeah,
when the sun's out. Up.
It's a completely different vibe, completely different audience.
Bro, during COVID, I bought a projector for that exact reason, because we couldn't get one. Sorry, we couldn't go to cinema.
Yeah.
So I just did that in my room. It was the best decision that I've ever made.
I also think you can't replicate some of the... I'll name three of my best cinematic experiences in recent years, right? One of them was Bad Boys Ride or Die.
Nice.
The Reggie scene. One of the best experiences I had this year. You can't replicate the experience I had watching Spider-Man No Way Home.
Yeah. Wow. Just being around people. Even that feeling of having a community there.
And you can't replicate what I saw when I saw in Avengers Infinity War and Endgame. You can't. I will never get those moments back. Ever, ever, ever.
Even Civil War. The sound design in Civil War, it's not going to be the same watching at home.
Yeah, I'm with you. And I think the shared community experience, like watching it with people and having either the same reaction or different reaction, or just that feeling of laughter and sound in unison, bringing people together.
It's
powerful.
It's the most beautiful thing ever, bro. Honest to God, man. Honest to God. And even like Oppenheimer, like how can you watch that at home first? It just doesn't make sense to me at all.
Yeah, no, yeah.
It just doesn't. And like, I went to go watch Barbie by myself,
mm-hmm.
and I went to go watch it
in pink.
nah. But that's what I was about to mention. The fact that when I was going to cinema and
people came out,
all of these little girls are in outfits. All of these
and guys.
Wait,
I saw that during Mingos.
All of these adults are in like cowboy outfits, in Ken outfits. Blah blah blah. The cinema was packed.
Marvel people would come in there. Marvel in their Doctor Strange or Kang.
It's just amazing, bro. But again, the market was fantastic. Do you know what I mean? Like to push it the way that they did was brilliant, and it's a beautiful thing. I sit there smiling, bro. I'm just like, this is so sick, bro. This is, man.
Yeah, one of the interesting things this week has been Inside Out 2, or the last week and a bit or so, when the film came out.
Ayo.
Oh, yeah, for real. I lost you. You lost me for a second. Anyway. No, but...
Sorry.
Yeah, you lost me for a second, bro.
What did you stop me? I didn't even think of that. Go on.
No, because there's most... Anyway.
Yeah, that's what I'm laughing.
Anyway. The film added 30.5 million on Friday, bumping its domestic haul to 285.7 million, which has made it surge past Dune Part 2, 282 million, to become the highest grossing North American release of the year so far, with only 8 days in the cinema. Which goes to show, people still do want to go to cinema.
Yeah.
There is still scope for people to go. It's about creating, I guess, an environment for people to want to go, giving people the credence and the space to do so by keeping things films in the cinema longer,
yeah.
Promoting your big blockbusters as well as your sort of lower budget films,
yeah.
And also audiences being willing to try and watch new films and different films beside what they've become accustomed to. So yeah, I think it's going to be an interesting year. I think from what I've read, some studios are looking towards 2025 to being their sort of year of focus for films, mm-hmm. Which is going to be interesting. I know we've got a lot of films that are being shot on IMAX coming out next year. I don't know if Blade is one of them. Blade was one of them, but I was done. Having Blade, but
I'm waiting for the announcement that's going to get cancelled.
That's another conversation for another time. But it's going to be interesting to see how this year does. I think one of the other interesting stats that I came across, if I can find it, was around Deadpool and Wolverine opening. It's projected to open between $200 and $239 million domestically. Projected to be the biggest opening for an R-rated movie and one of the biggest blockbuster openings ever.
Damn.
So yeah, one of the biggest openings for box office ever will be really, really cool for Disney, for Marvel, for fans of Deadpool and Wolverine, which is going to be
great.
For
Ryan, man, honestly, big man thing.
For Ryan and Hugh as well. Yeah, for Hugh.
Sorry.
And for people that want to go and watch Marvel. So yeah, it should be an interesting next couple of weeks and months ahead.
I'm so glad they cut down how many films.
Marvel. Okay, yeah.
One this year, innit? So.
Yeah. One film, one series, X-Men 97, which is definitely one. Some audiences back, I think, really, really good series. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see how this year does. Good conversation though. Go and watch films, man. Listen to what we say as well. I think you should listen to us. I think we've got some good reviewers here. Yeah. We've got different diverse opinions. You've got Bisola, you've got Manny, you've got Huss, Jason. So yeah, that's a wrap up of the episode today.
Just want to give a happy birthday to you know who you are. Love you.
Just say her name.
Yeah, happy birthday weekend to Basola. Shout out to Basola, join the gang. She's at 20.
That's not even who I was talking about.
Oh, who are you talking about?
God damn. Wait, oh.
Don't touch me. Don't touch me.
M.
Oh, that was 2 weeks ago.
This will give a shout
out. Basola's birthday was 2 days ago. You're a sickle.
That was
calm. Post Credit Podcast, man. A 14HQ original.
That's
lovers.
Insane.
Lovers of film, TV, and theatre. Shout out to Manny. Shout out to Hussam. You know the vibes, over and out.
Hi, I'm Donald Glover, and you are watching or listening to the Post Credit Scene.